Got open man, DJ Moore, end zone, touchdown, touchdown Bears.
I am Jeff Joniak.
Blitz is on, down he goes, Husker.
What was it like playing for Coach Ditka?
I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Pressure coming, he's in big trouble, down he goes, Montez Sweat.
No way.
Now, Bears Etc. brought to you by Miller Lite with the voices of the Bears, Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer.
It's draft week and the Bears are about to land some impactful blue chippers to a roster that has developed into a dangerous one in the NFC North. Welcome into the Bears Etc. podcast. We're at episode 65 and we're brought to you by Miller Lite. My broadcast partner, Tom Thayer, the veteran Bear and Super Bowl winning Bears guard. Coming up, we'll present the annual pre-draft Q&A with the Chicago media that was held here at Hallis Hall today, Tommy, with general manager Ryan Poles and assistant GM Ian Cunningham. Then had a chance to sit down with Ian one-on-one. We also had the Piccolo Award winners today, so a lot going on up here, as it always is. It's an annual affair. And some interesting comments from both Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham, as you'll hear here. But overall, does this week stir any memories for you? Because obviously, if you're not a first-round pick, everybody's kind of disappointed where they were drafted. I know you've vocalized that over the course of your time, and that was a long time ago, obviously. Fourth-round pick, still drafted. That's got to feel good, but you thought you would have been higher.
I did. You know, the draft is so different nowadays than it was back in my day, because back in my days, it was on a Tuesday, and they started with the first pick in the draft, and they just went straight through all the way to the end of the draft, which could have ended at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. But when you talk about a highly impactful draft that's going to add some blue chippers to the Chicago Bears roster, is we know one thing, that the Bears have the first pick in the draft. And everything other than that could be created with that ninth pick in the draft. They could make a pick and bring in another blue chipper, as you describe, or they could make a trade to add more picks to the draft and bring in some of those mid-range players that I was as a fourth rounder, but I didn't come in with any less confidence from the fourth round that you should come in as a first rounder. So I think it's going to be interesting to see the cast of candidates that Ryan Poles, Ian Cunningham, and the whole scouting staff set their sights on.
Well, as you indicated, Tommy, once you're picked, it doesn't matter. You're in the pool. I mean, yeah, you may have something attached to you for the rest of your career. All you was a first rounder that made it or didn't, or is a fourth rounder that outperformed his draft status, or, you know, just was here for a cup of coffee. Because once you're a Bear, once you're an NFL player, hey, let's go. We got to lock horns. We got to lock arms. We're teammates. And, you know, whatever, you know, so there's only 32 number ones. That's it. And there's only so many draft picks and there's a bunch of undrafteds, but you got to band together and that may live with you or spur you on throughout the course of your career, of course.
But, you know, during the week, you and I had an interesting off the mic conversation. And we are talking about the different individuals and how they get ready for the combine or how they get ready for their college day and the type of efforts they put forth to make sure that they do those tests at the best level they can. But, you know, Jeff, once you get drafted, it's not about getting ready for the 40. Yep. Or it's not getting ready to bench 225 as many times as you can. What can you do to yourself to increase and enhance your ability at the position that you are drafted for? Now it's not about benching 225 40 times. It's trying to bench 500 pounds. And it's not necessarily trying to run a 4.3 40. It's how good can your legs be in shape to stand up to the rigors of what you're going to go through from rookie minicamp to OTAs to training camp into a 17-game regular season that you've never put your body through. So I really did think that was an interesting conversation that we had about the different ways that these guys get ready for the incremental events that they're going through before the draft itself.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays, and you know, you dig deeper and you read some of the draft experts out there, the guys who spend every minute of every day working on this stuff, and so they learn about all the 300, 400-plus candidates to make it to the NFL. And first thing you realize is, you know, they're starting at 3 or 4 years old, and in some cases, they're getting trainers hired by 10. They're in youth football leagues that travel all over the country, and it's not like the old days. It's not, I mean, It just isn't. And it's almost like you have to, and we see this in all sports, Tom. There's not a lot of kids playing pickup football at the park. There's not a lot of kids throwing the ball around at the park. They may be kicking a soccer ball around, but they're in organized sports and they're in travel sports, and the money that's being spent by parents to put them there. You look at Caleb Williams, and I learned a lot in this podcast that Ryan Clark and his crew, Fred Taylor, had the other day called The Pivot. It was amazing. I invite everyone to take a listen, including you, Tommy. It was an hour and 40 minutes with Caleb Williams in his L.A. apartment. It was unbelievable. Learned a lot about Caleb, but, you know, from a small little kid, when he said, hey, I want to be a quarterback, okay, well, we're going to make you a quarterback. Like, this is what we're going to do. He had everything at his disposal to craft his body into an NFL football player, and he's about to become one. It's almost crazy. I knew it, but I didn't realize it because it's happening all over the place.
Well, let me ask you a question about one of your experiences this year. You had the opportunity to go down and spend some time with Devin Hester.
Oh, yeah.
He's getting ready to go into the Hall of Fame. And you were watching his son's youth program.
Yep.
As he coaches that program. Did anything surprise you about, as you were watching those young kids go through their paces, their uniform, their style, the showcasing of their talents that maybe they see on Saturday and Sunday afternoons, Monday nights? You know, did anything surprise you about that? Because you're talking exactly about every one of what these kids went through, and you're seeing it at a level that they're being coached by a Hall of Famer, and some of these kids that you recognize they have talent already.
Everything was a shock. I pulled up at a high school outside of Orlando or near Orlando. I get into the park, and I can't find a parking spot. It's just every kid's playing on every field that you can find. So there's like 8 games going on at once, and then here comes the next 8 games after that. And these little kids, they are walking around and being coached up by dads or ex-football players like Devin Hester or who and the moms were so involved as encouragement, but whatever came out of their mouth, it didn't matter. Like, they were getting on their kids, and everybody was pushing each other, and the interaction felt more like a high school football game or a college football game than it did a youth football game. It's serious business down there in Florida. So, and I was told, hey, it's just different. But it's apparently different all over the country now, because this is apparently what you have to do. You have to have a team of people to get you ready, starting at a very, very young age. And if you don't love, like Matt Eberflus today, Tommy, at the Piccolo Award, said, you know, he kept emphasizing, you know, we're looking for players who love football. That's one of the major things. And you got to love football to commit at a young age and stick with it. And many of these players that are going to be in this draft, they almost quit. They almost quit at a young age. It was going to be too hard. Or they just didn't love it. They wanted to play basketball, or they wanted to play baseball, or they wanted to wrestle, and then they always came back to football. Then you know it's in their blood. Or they grew into a football size and outgrew other sports. I am impressed by it. I have to say, like, if your dream is to become an NFL player and, you know, you write it down on a piece of paper at 6 years old and you are going to realize your dream on Thursday night, Friday night, or Saturday, and I got much respect for you and the people that you worked with to get you here. And the love of the game, I mean, that's, to me, the hardest part to find. And the heart to find the lion, or in our case, a bear, of a football player that's going to be committed for the next 8 to 10 years.
You know, not to get off subject, but this past week I went and spoke to a group of 8th graders. And I was telling them about finding a sport that I love to play, in playing a sport my whole life that I never touched the football. Hmm. And it became a shock to a lot of these kids, because you think of baseball, you think of basketball, you think of a position that you play in football that you touch the ball regularly. And then you think about the dreams of an offense and defensive lineman, where you're rarely to never touch a football. And so it is a really hard position to develop the love of the game. But when we get back to why we are talking about this, because of the development of Caleb Williams, he's a guy that's been developing his position skills since a really young age with a group of really young, talented kids.
Unreal. It really, I have much respect for all these guys trying to get here and that will land here in the draft, not just Chicago, but in the league. If you're a football player, it's a rare gift to be able to get to the NFL. It is a privilege. It's not a guarantee. When you get here, you got to always have that in the back of your mind. Hey there, Bears fans. And Tommy, that includes you. I've got some news. Some news that's going to have you raising your glasses. So bear with me here. Did you know that the Chicago Bears are ready to select their first number one overall NFL draft pick since 1947? And they currently have number 9 overall, too. We all know that. This is a historic moment, and Miller Lite is going to help us celebrate, and usher in a new era of Bears football in a way that matches this draft's epicness. So mark your calendars. Coming up Thursday, April 25th, Miller Lite throwing the biggest toast in Chicago history at the official Miller Lite Chicago Bears HQ bars. There will be Miller Lite draft specials, and you can get your hands on awesome Bears merch, tickets for the upcoming season, and there's more. There's a chance to win a pair of season tickets if you post your cheers to Instagram with the hashtag #LightsUpForThePick, #sweepstakes, and #MillerLite. So again, Instagram with the #LightsUpForThePick, #sweepstakes, and #MillerLite. So spread the word, Chicago. This is a celebration for the ages, and we want you to be a part of it. So go to the Bears website to find an HQ bar near you and come out on draft night, Thursday, April 25th, to be a part of history. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. It is an epic night. It's going to be an epic night, Tommy. Epic.
Since 1947, and I was thinking about that today, you know, the last time the Bears had the first pick in the draft. And because of the draft wasn't the show that it is now, it kind of would be underscored back then. But now it's been the most talked about football subject since the end of the final gun of the Super Bowl. Because as soon as that gun ended, they said, Bears, you're on the clock. And yep, we have been on the clock ever since then, and it's been a subject that hasn't died.
All right, so let's listen in. This is the Raw interview with the media on Tuesday with General Manager Ryan Poles and Assistant General Manager Ian Cunningham to give you some insights into what is on their mind as they look at this 2024 draft and where it leaves the Bears and their roster.
Just want to say there's an energy in this building this week with all the players coming back. They got back last Monday, so it's good to see some familiar faces, get caught up with them, get to see some new faces, get to know them a little bit more. But that energy also is because of the draft this week. So we get a chance to add a few more players to this roster that we're excited about. Before we get going, I just want to say thank you. So bear with me a little bit, kind of like last year. Just first to Flus and the coaching staff. Obviously, we have a lot of new coaches, primarily on the offensive staff, but a couple on defense as well. They've been awesome through this process, through free agency, with all the evaluations we've asked them to watch or do, as well as our draft process. These guys have worked tirelessly. A lot of hours that have been put into this. So just want to say thank you to them. Our personnel staff, in particular our college staff, Trey Koziel, Breck Ackley have done a tremendous job of really spearheading this whole thing. Can't thank them enough. Our college scouts as well, just all the hours that they put on the road. Ryan and I both have done it. The sacrifice that their families have to make for us in order for us to be put in this position to do what we're going to do this weekend. Just want to make sure that we say thank you to them for their work. With Flus and Ryan, their leadership, it's a collaborative approach. So it does take a village. We lean a lot on all of our football ops staff. First, just want to say thank you to our video and our IT with Darby, their crew, Mike, his crew. We make a lot of tweaks throughout the year, and they've been really helpful in making our process a lot more efficient. Analytics with Krithi, Hubley, Andrea, with all the mock drafts and simulations we do, all the models, just the information in which they provide have been really helpful for us. Our medical staff, our trainers, Dre, Tim, our doctors, just providing us with the medical information in which we need. our performance team, when we bring guys in on 30 visits, you know, just them giving us insight in terms of growth potential for the players. Just want to make sure to note them, our wellness team and engagement team, Carla, Andy, who's been great to get to know, along with Erica and Bryce. They do a lot for us, so want to say thank you to them, as well as Tarp and Pete with all the security information in which they provide us. Kyle, Jay, George, Miles, seems like they were in a triple threat position this whole offseason, just with all the travel that we've had to do. They've had to pivot. They've been flexible. Just want to make sure we highlight them. And last but not least, Ashton Washington, our scouting coordinator, does an incredible job of keeping us organized and aligned, as well as our three scouting assistants, Keith Earle, Jake Ponikvar, and David Dudek. These guys juggle a lot. We've both been there. It's a tough job. It's a thankless job. But it's been really cool to see their growth this year, and they all have a bright future in this league.
Awesome. Before I open up to questions, just also want to shout this guy out. I am blessed out of my socks to have him by my side through this process. Just especially when you reflect back to the first 2 years getting this thing off the ground, to have a guy like him, it's not a yes man that keeps me in line when I start getting off track. To keep our staff together when I get pulled in different directions. We wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for Ian as well, being there and being an unbelievable partner. So,
thanks, man.
Yeah. So we'll open up to questions.
Ryan, you've had such a long process with this. Your pick is not contingent on what anyone else does. You have the top pick. Yep. You've talked throughout publicly as though Caleb is the plan. Are you set on making him your quarterback now?
So, unfortunately, it's one of those things I think everyone's got to tune in on Thursday to watch and figure out. But I feel really good about our process and where we are and where we're headed. So, we know what we're going to do, but everyone's going to have to wait till Thursday to go there.
What did you learn about him when he came to Dallas and when you took him to dinner with a couple of your vets?
Yeah, I think it just confirmed a lot of the information that we got. You know, there's a kind of testing where his football understanding is. That part, you know, getting him with the coaches, that was a very positive interaction there. And then getting him with some of our players, that's important to us. We're in a really good place with our culture and our locker room. As much as I can, I want those guys a part of the process of building this team. I trust their feedback. And, you know, I think that chemistry is really important. So that's why we did that.
How did that dinner work specifically? Are you at a different table or are you across the room?
Yeah, I was in a different room.
Different room? And okay.
Brian, does the league not want you to announce the pick, or is that just your personal MO?
Almost told me, so it's my personal deal. And let's have some excitement on Thursday, right?
You said you wanted to get feedback from your players during from their dinner with Caleb. What was the feedback that you got from them and from the coaches that were?
Yeah, really intelligent guy. Came across as a really good teammate. Easy to talk to, down to earth. You know, we've talked through this process about you know, the whole Hollywood thing. He's all ball, wants to work, wants to get better, wants to win as a team. That's the number one thing for him, on top of being successful. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is, like, does he fit in our culture and what we're trying to do? And all signs were that he does. So that was positive.
Right, I'm sure you guys have identified how many blue players you all feel are available at positions of need if you're in the top nine. And just because you all have the ninth pick, that's probably the most likely scenario that you pick there. But what would be the second most likely option? Would that be to move up for a guy you guys absolutely love, or to fall back and get one of those guys?
Yeah, that's hard to answer right now. I think as the draft unfolds, there's going to be some indicators that kind of start to educate us on how we need to move to acquire the top talents in this draft.
If a trade back does kind of become the scenario, is there a threshold where you go, okay, this is too far back to move? We want to kind of stay in this range. Is there a range for you?
Yeah, as I've said in the past, like, we need to count, you know, the players in certain ranges, and that's, you know, we would feel uncomfortable if we got outside of whatever threshold that is. So again, it's kind of depends on the first couple picks and how they move, and we'll kind of count them up and say, you know what, here's the line, we can't go past that.
Do you feel a need to add more picks?
Do I feel
a need to add more picks going in with only four?
No, I feel really good at where we're at. If that happens, that's great. If we have less, that's whatever we need to do to kind of accomplish what we're setting out to do and improve our football team.
Ryan, you said this kind of for both of you guys. You said that Ian is not a yes man. So how does that, if you could share with us a little bit, how that process works if he is vehemently disagreeing with something that you're saying? How do you take it all into account? Or if other voices are saying no, Ryan, what do you take it all into account?
Yeah, take it all into account. You want to answer that question?
I don't know how to answer that. I think it was towards you. I don't know. What does a yes man mean?
Yeah, so I think the big thing is you talk about whatever process you're in, if it's a draft of kind of what your standards are, how you want to operate, what you're looking to accomplish. And you lay that out in some type of it's a conversation, but an outline. And there's always situations, oftentimes there's situations that start to push you outside of what you said you wanted to accomplish, what we all agreed as a coaching staff, a front office, what we want to accomplish. And there's things that happen that start to push you outside those lines. And with all of those things happening, sometimes as a leader, you do get distracted. There are things that kind of pull you outside. Maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe we need to switch gears. And you need people like Ian, like Flus, like Kevin, to say, hey, man, like, we want to accomplish this. We want to stay in these lines. We want to do it this way. And once they kind of see that you're getting off that track, to nudge you back into where you should be. I think I've been fortunate and blessed enough to have the skill set to take in that information, not to take it personal, not to say, well, I'm running the show. Like, it's all about what I want to do. It's listening to people that you trust so that you stay in the lines of doing things that you, how you want to do it and how you want to accomplish your goals.
What do you think the biggest area of needs are still on this team?
The nice thing is from the work that we've done, I feel pretty good about just being flexible. That's why we did that project with kind of some premium positions, with O-line, with D-line, receiver, and all that feedback was outstanding. Like, it gave you a really good feeling. Like, there's different championship caliber teams that have built their teams in different ways. And it really, I think, solidified just those premium positions are important. So that, I'd say, like, those three are there. It matches up with his drafts pretty well.
Ryan, there's a lot fewer underclassmen declaring now than there were like 5-6 years ago. How much of that influences your comfort with having four picks and also the comfort to move some of the picks that you did to get Bates and Keenan and the guys that you did?
Yeah, I think we both feel comfortable with how the board set based off of the draft class. Each year is different, right? This year, I think there were, I want to say, 58 juniors that declared. To your point, like, each year is different. So we kind of have to work in the constructs of this year with what we have given to us.
How do you look back at the roster that you inherited and that first draft you had, and now here you are in a position where you feel really good about the way the roster is built. And what is the feeling heading into the draft, looking at what you've brought together so far?
Yeah, like, the job's never done, but we have had those conversations, and it does put a smile on your face in terms of the work that we've done. Like, I feel like we've done a good job getting the roster where it is. It makes me feel really fortunate about some of the things that happened to allow us to build the roster maybe a little bit more efficiently than if everything was kind of flat. So it's something to be proud of, but at the same time, you know, the job's not done. I've talked about it before. On paper, it's on paper. Like, you got to play and you got to win games in this league. That's what it comes down to. But we have taken the time just to, for a second, not long, but, and we're proud of where we've come from.
How do you all balance the subject? Is the idea of having so few picks, is that, how much does the strength of the current roster play into your comfort level with having that number of picks versus your first couple of years you needed a lot of picks?
Yeah, things shift and change as you go along. it also, I mean, this it's going to be hard to make this team now. It's going to be really hard to make this team. That doesn't mean you don't want more shots later. We'll always you know, welcome a lot of picks, but it doesn't force you to panic about the situation we're in right now with how many picks we have. So it fits our roster, but it also fits kind of like we just talked about, the current status of this draft, and then moving forward what next year looks like as well.
When you evaluate your needs at defensive line, how do you weigh the impact of a defensive tackle versus an end? And you said, you know, different teams build in different ways. Was part of your evaluation at that position, okay, who did it by going inside first versus getting an edge rusher first?
Yeah, we've talked about inside and outside. Both are multipliers. Generally speaking, I would say the inside guy has the shortest path to the quarterback. So therefore, like if you have, and we both have lived with really good elite players that are in the inside, and it changes everything. And it opens up a lot for other teams as well. So yeah, having that interior rush is probably a preference when you have an outside guy. It makes it really difficult to scheme up. So.
Ryan, are you able to shoot
the top 30 visit, the one that where Caleb and some of the other guys were there for that dinner? Guys aren't here yet, current players. How did you get guys to come back? Were they volunteering? Was it something that they wanted to be here for? Or was it something that you reached out to them about being a part of?
Yeah, I respect their time. It's off season, so just if they were available and they wanted to, they could do that. There's a good chunk of the roster that stays here, and there's a good group that, you know, disperses around the country to their kind of off season locations, kind of went through it that way. But there's some guys I had in mind that I think it would be important for to sit down with.
Brian, are you able to share how many first-round grades that you guys have? And then, I guess, like, how do you delineate when you use a top 10 pick outside of the first pick? Like, what does that player have to have to use in order for you to use the ninth pick?
Yeah, I mean, they got to impact the football team from a skill set standpoint. But we always are going to look at some key things when we talk about passion for the game. We talk about coachability, dependability, resilience. Those things are going to be consistent from the first overall pick to, you know, a seventh round draft pick. Like we want guys that have that. We have an indicator we put on their tag. We put a bear head on their tag because, you know, we call them the grizzly, the top bear. They have those traits. So we're always looking to hit those. And obviously the earlier, you know, in the draft, you want to have those. The other thing too is, you know, we had a good conversation with a Hall of Famer that is one of Ian's mentors, and he said you want the guys in that first round to be the cover of your album. You know, you want those to be the one where everyone can look to that player and be like, all right, what he's made of is what we all need to be a part of. So that's important as well.
In the evaluation process, how do you balance a scenario where maybe you have an opportunity to get the third best prospect at one position versus getting the top prospect at another position?
Say that one more time for me.
Maybe you can get the third best receiver. Maybe you can get the top defensive lineman on your board. How do you balance going about that process in terms of making that decision?
Yeah, that'll come down to all the characteristics that we look like, the skill set, the whole person. We have this long process. Ian and I sit down. We actually sequence the board. One through whatever it is this year, 200, whatever, could be less than that. And we sequence it to kind of sort that part out. So you work your stacks vertically, and then you work horizontal, and you work down the board that way.
Caleb's been very open with his huge goals. Like, what's been your reaction when you've learned that, you know, he wants to, you know, compete with 8 Super Bowls and Tom Brady and all that stuff? Like, what's your reaction when you hear him say stuff like that?
Yeah, I love it. I think we all should have huge goals. We have huge goals here, win multiple championships, and that's what we shoot for. That's you're more intentional when you have these goals that you're shooting. You have to live a certain way. You have to practice a certain way. You have to go about your business a certain way in order to accomplish those. So if everything else is aligned underneath that, that gets me excited.
I know you don't have to wait until Thursday until it becomes official, but you guys only hosted one quarterback on a top 30. Caleb only took one visit to a team. as you go through the homework process, what made you comfortable in going that route of not having some of the other top QBs in here?
Yeah, I would say the different prospects are kind of, the journey to collect all that information is different for everyone. There's guys on our board that are high that didn't come in for a 30 visit, that we've had other touch points. Our networks in the building know the player inside and out that we really, really trust. You had the combine. There's different kind of touch points. You don't necessarily have to bring everybody in on a visit.
Ian, you've been a popular candidate around the league in the hiring cycles, but you've stayed here. What has it meant to you to be part of the experience of theoretically now completing the rebuild project here?
It's funny. We've been talking about that a little bit. Personally, just extremely grateful for the opportunity. Not many people in any walk of life get to work with arguably one of their best friends, right? And so for me to be able to work alongside him, for him to trust me, we all knew that, this was his goal. I have a similar goal. But it means everything for me just to be able to work with him every single day. I know my opportunity will come. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a fun ride, and looking forward to this weekend to kind of see things through.
All right, well, one of the first things is he's not saying he's drafting Caleb Williams, but we realize that that's going to happen, right? That's going to happen, but let it be a surprise. Let him enjoy the moment. At number nine, he's open to all sorts of things. He's got players at many of the premium spots that we're talking about here. We're talking wide receiver. We're talking edge. We're talking offensive lineman. And up or down, if a trade develops, but he doesn't feel he has to, he doesn't feel he has to have more picks, he's fine with the four. He'd be fine with less. He just wants the best players. And he also, as you heard in that statement, Tommy, and that's the most powerful one, he said, is going to be really hard. It's going to be difficult to make this roster.
You know, the thing about just before the roster, you think about the draft. This is going to be a first-time experience for Ryan Poles, because you make the first pick in the draft, and that's a first-time experience that they've been a part of. And then the draft really gets started, because now you're thinking about all the different scenarios that you could face at number nine and then how you're going to handle them when they come about. And then you think about the players that you may immediately want to pick, or if you wanted to create more picks within the draft. And then you talk about the roster, the development of the roster, the competitiveness at certain positions. It's going to be a hard decision to make, because say you have the receiver there that you want, and you already have DJ Moore, you have Keenan Allen, you have a group of other receivers. I'm not leaving them out. That's an incredibly competitive position right there. You talk about offensive line. You have a star right tackle that you drafted last year in the first round, and you have a kid that's been playing left tackle since the moment he's got here. So, tackle is probably the most coveted offensive line position that you could have. Then you talk about how can we complement Montez Sweat, a player that really has changed the roster, the accomplishments of this defense, and how can you compliment him? There's those types of players out there too. I think it's a great problem to have, because, you always say you can never have enough talent, and
no.
The Bears have a chance to add more.
And I don't think they can go wrong. I don't think they can go wrong. The talent projecting, and again, these are all projections of talent, because of God knows we've seen over the course of our time, and you've experienced it firsthand as a player, high draft picks, they don't always work out. They sometimes in the first round, it's harder to the last than if you were a second or third round pick for a variety of reasons. It's got to be in the right place at the right time. You got to have a plan for the guy. He's got to fit the scheme, got to fit the locker room. I'll tell you, that interview with Ryan Poles with the media, didn't it hit you hard when he said he had his 30 visit with Caleb? They took all these guys out to dinner with teammates. He wanted the teammates to have a say. Like, up to a point, they're going to have a say about, okay, we've developed a culture here, and we got to make sure that the culture is the right fit. And so you're talking about guys in their off season, and a handful of guys, he didn't name exactly who all went, but we have an idea of who went. And they didn't have to go. They went to dinner to meet Caleb Williams to find out if this is going to work or not. I thought that was fantastic and a great idea by Ryan in this process that he went through with his staff. And Ian pointed out everybody that had their hand in this, and it's an extensive list of people. It's not just scouts hopping in their cars going to scout players. This is a massive organizational effort to get the right opinions, thoughts, and analysis on the quarterbacks and everybody else in the top 10.
Well, there's two things that I really like what players from the Bears on the roster have said this offseason. And Jalen Johnson drew a line in the sand. And he talked about what they expect inside the locker room from the players that are going to turn this team into a championship caliber team. And if you may have done things in college, you may have to leave them behind because this is a veteran locker room with a lot of important voices from Tremaine Edmonds to TJ Edwards to Montez Sweat to now Jalen Johnson to the guys on the offensive line to DJ Moore to Cole Kmet. And so I like the fact that Jalen Johnson talked about the importance of the culture inside the locker room. And then I still like what Montez Sweat said about the importance of beating Green Bay. Because these veteran players that have a big impact in this locker room, they already have messages that have been delivered. And for them to go out there and meet some of these draft choices that are going to be newly brought aboard, I'm glad that those important messages are out there saying, look, we want you to know what you're coming into. We're not coming into looking for you to lead us out of this. We want you to be part of what we've already started. And so I think that's important to let these draft choices know they're not going to be the sole responsibility for success. They're going to be part of the building of success and success into the future.
Tommy, game day snacking calls for good foods, chunky guacamole made with Hass avocados, tomatoes, onions, cilantro, and a squeeze of lime juice. It's the perfect snack to watch while the Bears win. Score some today at your local grocery store. Game day is guac day, the topic of winning and losing. Part of my conversation with the assistant general manager, Ian Cunningham. Welcome to the Bears Etc. podcast, Ian Cunningham. How you doing?
Outstanding. Thank you for having me, as always.
Yeah, and we love having you. Tell me where you're at right now, 48 hours away, mentally. Do you have butterflies for something like this, or just the feeling of confidence that the job's been well done to get here?
Yeah, there's a sense of calm. There's a sense of, you know, the haze in the barn, per se. But I think that has to do with, well, I know that has to do with just the preparation in which we put in thus far, right? Countless hours in the draft room, watching tape individually as a group. Our scouts have done a tremendous job just providing us the information in which helps Ryan and I feel comfortable about, you know, where we place guys and where we ultimately put guys on the board. So really just excited and ready for this thing to kick off on Thursday.
And really it's a 3-year process, because when you strip it down like it was and you build the way you have and you're getting to a place where you feel quite comfortable with this roster and a big piece going to be added at number one, as you take a step back and see what has transpired during this period of time with one of your best friends, if not your best friend, period, in the world, in Ryan Poles. How do you assess that?
It's special. It's special, man. Like, when you really think about it, I think one of these things, when you go through it, you know, those first few years, they were hard. Those days were hard, but they were fun because we were learning on the fly, but also sticking to our guns. And then where we are now, I don't know if you ever really feel comfortable with where the roster is, just in our line of work. You're always just wanting to make sure that you've got your bases covered. You're creating competition at all spots. And at the same time, you're always looking towards the future to see what the next crop is and how they could potentially fit into the roster, whether it be through free agency or through the draft. So it's been fun. It's, you know, I can't wait until Thursday. Can't wait for this weekend. It's been an exciting time for sure.
How hard has it been to lose, knowing that there was a pretty good chance you were going to for a while?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we ask the question, at least in scouting sometimes, to prospects, do you love winning or do you hate losing?
Yeah.
Right? And for me, I hate losing. It sticks with you. You remember the losses a lot more than the victories. To be honest with you, I really only remember really two victories, and those were both Super Bowls that I was a part of.
Huh.
The losses sting. And like I said, they stick with you. But, you know, when you try to find you know, those silver linings in those losses, especially as you're building it. And it's really a testament to Flus and the coaching staff, because I remember that first year having buddies on other teams come up to me after the game or text me after the game, said, man, you guys play your butts off, right? And that's just the ultimate sign of respect. Obviously, you're losing, but it's the ultimate sign of respect. Like, all right, we're headed in the right direction. Even though we're losing, we are still playing hard. And that's really due to Flus, his coaching staff, and the players in which we have.
Right. You know, and we've talked about this too. Again, it's the I'll go back to it because where you've come from, Philadelphia and Baltimore, grew up in the Kansas City organization a little bit, Ryan's Kansas City. When you close your eyes, do you see a Bear? You know, like, you know what a Raven looks like. Yeah. You know what a Steeler looks like. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And we're getting there, aren't we?
We're getting there. I think we talked about that maybe last year. I think one of the biggest signs of respect in the scouting community is when buddies on another team, they said, oh, I knew you guys were drafting him. You know, he's a Bear. That's what we want to get to. And I think we're starting to turn that corner. Feel like our scouts have done a good job of identifying Bears and what we're looking for, and I feel like these first few draft classes, these free agent classes, I think we're starting to see that showcase on the field, and hopefully everybody else is going to know what a Bear is soon.
Let me ask you about that too, because everybody has their favorite players. Like, you watch the tape, I don't care if it's the scout that's just starting or a guy with a grizzled experience, your eyes, Ryan's eyes, coach's eyes. And they, you know, they fall in love with somebody. Maybe they don't have all of those Bears boxes checked. The grizzly bear helmet on the card. How do you sift through that? Because, man, somebody's going to push for somebody really hard. But do you have to push back and say, listen, man, this is the box.
Yeah,
we got to stay in this box.
Those are the fun conversations, right? Though that's what I think makes really good draft rooms, where you create a room of psychological safety where guys aren't afraid to speak their mind, even though they may be the low guy on them.
Or says the man who's a psychology major at University of Virginia, by the way.
Right. Or they may be the high guy on them, right? But you want to create that room where guys are willing and able to speak their mind. And then it's on, you know, Ryan or myself to ask poignant questions, right? Direct questions as to why they feel that way. What's holding them back, and then maybe that allows us to dig a little bit more on their reasonings for their opinion.
All right, you got number one pick. It's a quarterback-driven draft every year. It doesn't matter how many are in there, and the presumed number one by most people is looking at Caleb Williams. We'll find out when you open up the Christmas present on Thursday night, approximately 7:05. You're going to wait 5-10 minutes? I don't know. Boom, hand in the card, let's go. What did you learn about him that you didn't know?
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, we've got to wait till Thursday night where we'll see. But just throughout the process, here's a guy that's been resilient, you know, coming from Gonzaga High School in D.C., going all the way to Oklahoma, when we've got to remember Spencer Rattler was arguably the number one quarterback at the time at Oklahoma. He decides to go there, compete against him. He ends up winning that job midway through the season as a true freshman, then going over to L.A. with Lincoln Riley when he went to USC, winning the Heisman Trophy as a sophomore, and then this past year seeing some of that adversity hit, right? He goes in wanting to win a national championship, wanting to win a Pac-12 title, and, you know, everybody saw him fall short on national television, and the passion in which he showed with his mom, right? He's a true competitor. He loves the game. He's a great teammate. We've asked a lot of players just about him and other players on other teams about him. And everybody sings the same tune. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, he's a good prospect.
Did you happen to see this podcast, The Pivot, with Ryan Clark?
I saw parts of it.
Hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, I haven't gotten through
it. I invite everyone to take a look at it. Forget about the Bears for a minute. Let's just talk about a 22-year-old young man who is polished and way beyond his years of maturity. That's the teaser. I'll let you folks go check it out, because you'll get a better idea of what that young man is all about and how he was raised.
No doubt.
Would you say that?
No doubt.
All right. At number nine, Are you always formulating and thinking about, you know, oftentimes we say, okay, especially you have two first round picks, but even if you have a first and a second, it's a high, you know, you're trying to pair up something that, you know, these are going to be two guys who are going to be day one starters. That's kind of the plan, right? You want all your guys to compete for a starting job, but do you feel really good in the position that you are going to have choices?
We do.
Yeah.
We do. We feel that right now, but I feel like with all this, that's why we put ourselves through worst case scenarios, through all the simulations, through all the mocks that we do, to say, what if, right? What would we do in this situation? What if you're stuck and you can't trade back? Who do you take? Would you trade up for this prospect? Would you trade back for this or would you trade back with this offer? Depending upon how many guys are on the board at the time. So you try to put yourself through all those scenarios, in the event that it, you know, one of those ends up happening on Thursday night. So we feel prepared. We're looking forward to it, but like, that's the fun of the draft is, we've got to wait till Thursday.
Have you had calls for 1 and 9 throughout this whole process?
Honestly, we'll start those conversations here right after I get done with you, and we'll get to asking some teams and just kind of getting a pulse of the landscape.
Last question. Every draft has its own character and its own style to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. In a few words, how would you encompass what this draft is all about?
Ooh, great question, Jeff. Gosh. I think it's really talented at the top. I think the premium positions are a lot of really talented players. I think there's going to be a lot of, I would say, I have a feeling there's going to be some movement in this draft. I really
not
do.
Just first,
not
either.
Just first,
throughout the draft.
Throughout the draft, I just have a feeling there's going to be more action, just because of the talent level at different positions, the talent level at the top, the talent level in the mid, a little bit of the volume or lack thereof in the middle to late round. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, just like you are.
Have fun.
Thank you, man.
Enjoy.
Appreciate it.
Good
that.
Luck with everything.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. So there, Tommy, don't think that they didn't realize that, hey, it was going to be a hard grind these past couple years, and where they're landing right now, fortunate to have the number one pick by virtue of some of their own decisions, moving around, getting the trade with DJ Moore in Carolina to begin with, and then a little luck that Carolina had the season that they had a year ago, but also all these moves, knowing that every loss stings. It stings. As he said, he only remembers two wins in his life, the two Super Bowls he won with Philadelphia and Baltimore. So it was painful, but you had to get through the pain to get to the good stuff. And I think this franchise is perched on the doorstep of the good stuff. Would you agree?
Well, first of all, I love DJ Moore. And, you know, he was the guy that was at the forefront of the trade, and we didn't know a lot about him until we got the experience of watching his toughness, his tenacity, his catchability, his run after catch, the way that he lends to the culture of a tough guy image in this locker room. So, but I also love the experience that Ryan Poles and Eden Cunningham are both grown through with successful franchises. When you think of what the Kansas City Chiefs have been able to accomplish and what we've seen out of the Baltimore Ravens and Philadelphia Eagles throughout time, I think their experiences are pushing this team in the exact direction where we've always wanted to see this team go as broadcasters and a fan of the team. They're bringing those pieces together, they're putting them in place to turn this thing around. And Kevin Warren always says, we don't want a year of success. We want long-term success. And I do think that's what Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham have in their sights. How do we bring players together so we have a successful run for the long term? And so that's why, you know, when this whole trade started last year and DJ came aboard, I couldn't have been more impressed with any one player that's come aboard the Bears for a long time. Montez Sweat comes aboard, and all of a sudden it's a completely different defense. Now you know what Ryan and Ian have been studying all offseason and those pieces that you talk about that are going to be put in place. I'm excited to see what they offer us.
Ian, it's a cool thing that these guys are best friends, and they are not yes men to each other. They challenge each other, and they give their thoughts, and they built a –
front office that has a lot of tentacles to it, a lot of hands involved, and coming up with the right program and plan. And you got to find the guys to fit that plan, and they've gone about it in the right way. As I've said 100 times, I'll say it 100 more. I'm just echoing what Ryan has said many, many times. The hard way is the right way, and you just can't. This is not like a chia pet where you add water and tomorrow morning you got a full, you know, blossoming plant on your windowsill. No, this takes some pain.
Well, all of us, Ryan, myself, and Ian, we've learned the hard way because we are ex-linemen.
Yeah.
And when you start football as a Pop Warner player, there's not a lot of people that volunteer in the middle of August as a 9-year-old to be an offensive tackle. That's something you're assigned to. So I do think some of the callousness that these guys have learned throughout a career as an offensive lineman, it really helps the decision-making process when they're looking at talent across the board.
And the offensive line coach of the Bears talked today at the Piccolo Awards. He did an outstanding job in a suit and tie, Tommy. Chris Morgan says to say hello to his big guy here. How's the big guy doing? I go, he's great. He's doing fine. He's getting ready. And he introduced Darnell Wright. Had unbelievable things to say about Darnell. Was heartfelt. Yeah. Had a big, long explanation of what his first year impact and where his future lies. And it was very, and we're going to hear some of Darnell here in a minute, but really impressive. And so the Piccolo Award winners, Darnell was the rookie winner, and these are chosen by teammates. So these resonate. It's all about, you know, the courage and the fight and the teamwork and the loyalty and the dedication of Brian Piccolo, the late Brian Piccolo. And then the veteran winner, TJ Edwards, and the veteran winner, TJ Edwards, an undrafted player who did it the hard way to get to here, the hometown kid, just a tremendous cornerstone piece for the Bears through free agency. So they are the winners. And the reason I bring all this up and leading up to this point I'm going to make here, these winners that this award was given started in 1970. So the 1972 winner was here today, Jim Osborne. 1975 winner Roland Harper just had a hip replacement, working through that. Always a delightful conversation with Roland. The 91 and 96 winner Chris Zorich and 93 winner Tom Waddle. They were all here today. It means that much. But I was talking to Chris afterwards, and we were talking about the impact of the historic nature of this franchise. And I said, yeah, you know, there's a time when I don't think it resonated with players here. But it's definitely so right now because the place is a breathing museum of history. It's in their face. They, you know, Borgonzi talked about walking through the players' tunnel every day just to get that game day feel because that entrance is lit up with all the Hall of Fame numbers of all the great Bears. And you got to walk through that every day and it gets them jacked up. And you got the Halas statue out front. And I do believe that today's players, and Darnell Wright brought it up, TJ Edwards lived it as a fan, you live it every day as a fan, and as an ex-player and as a broadcaster for some 30 years, unbelievable feeling about where this organization is headed. And I really feel that Matt Eberflus is doing a great job, as is Ryan Poles, and the whole organization. Let's not forget about the past. This past, this franchise that is the original, 1920, 150th year coming up. And I think that's important in some way. I know I'm trying to make it seem like an idealistic view, but I'm hopeful that this is a time and place when players know, hey, listen, man, this is serious business over here in Chicago. And Caleb Williams, from what I heard, he knows it too. And I think he appreciates the history of the game and what he's about to step into.
First of all, the older you get, the more it means to you. This past weekend, I was at an ALS dinner with Jim Osborne. And he was a legendary character to me because he was drafted in 1972 when I was 11 years old. And I knew who Jim Osborne was the whole time he played for the Bears. He was a great student of the great Clyde Emerick, and Clyde loved him like a son. And Ozzie was explaining to me how he was helping Roland Harper go to his doctor's appointments through his hip rehabilitation. I like the fact that Chris Zorich and Tom Waddle were there, because it just shows you how much this award means to them and to be a part of the Bears. And it reminds me, the first time I ever met Chris Zorich was at his mom's funeral. I didn't know him. I didn't know his mom, but I felt I had to go there just to introduce myself as a Notre Damer. And then when we ended up drafting him, we became closer friends and still have a good, close relationship. So the Bears are as big as anything in life. But the thing about it is, after you leave the Bears, they stay a major part of your life. And I think that's the reflection of the Piccolo Award.
Well said. Busy Hard Seltzer, flavors for every vibe. Celebrate responsibly. Molson Coors Beverage Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we're brought to you by PNC, official bank of the Bears. All right, let's listen in to both T.J. Edwards and Darnell Wright. They were peppered with questions after the ceremony, the Brian Piccolo Award ceremony here at Hallisaw, with thoughts on what this franchise is headed towards, what it looks like with Caleb Williams as the likely number one overall pick, and this team in general, what they've added here in this offseason.
I mean, there's always a buzz when it comes to football time in Chicago. I think there's so many great things happening here. We added a lot of great pieces. I think that first team meeting we had kind of in the offseason was exciting to see some new faces, some familiar faces, and get to work, man. Whoever comes here, we're excited. We just want to hit the ground running and get this thing going.
What do you think it would mean if a rookie quarterback came in and kind of took the city by storm?
I mean, it'd be incredible for all of us, right? I mean, I think that's the hope. Again, whoever kind of comes in and who's ever under center, whether that be someone who's here already or a new guy, we're excited. We'll embrace them and they'll fit into the culture, because I know our front office does their research for sure.
TJ, the Bears took kind of a unique approach with the top 30 visits by having some of the current players interact with the soon-to-be rookies, whether they're here or somewhere else. What did you learn from the dinner that you were a part of with Caleb Williams? I know there were a couple others there too.
It was just a dinner, some other guys there, but just to, say hello and things like that. But, I think that's I'll kind of just leave it at that, what we went down to dinner and things like that. But I'm sure Poles has a good answer or something like that.
What's the importance of getting to potentially know a teammate before they're drafted here and the benefit of that for you?
It's just kind of one of those things to, you get to meet someone, possibly a teammate and things like that. And, it's kind of, the league is different, right? You meet new people every day, every year. So you get to know people to see how they, fit in culture and things like that. But at the end of the day, once we get people here and once whoever is signed will be here, we'll hit the ground running with that.
How would you describe kind of the energy in the building right now?
It's exciting, right? I mean, I think, again, we all, the guys who were here understand how we ended last year, and no one wants to be home in January during that time, and we understand that we got to first get to know each other, especially the new guys that are added in, and then from there we got to start hitting the ground running and start fast this year, so we're excited.
Anticipating draft night is just, you don't know where you're going to be, you don't know how it's going to shake out, so just all the unanswered questions and the unknowns can kind of get you nervous a little bit, but it all works out.
Darnell, when you reflect back on your entire rookie year, what are you most proud of last year?
Probably just sticking together with my teammates, really, and learning the game from some of the older guys. That's really it.
Does it feel different to you now that you're back in the offseason program? Do you feel like more of a veteran come in than you did?
Yeah, definitely a little bit. Just being more familiar just with the building itself, just knowing where to go. Like when I first got here, I didn't know where things were. But
thought process on him,
on
Caleb Williams.
I think he's a good player. There's a lot of media stuff that goes on during the draft, and I think once all the media stuff dies down, he'll get to work, and just like any other player would, and it'll be good.
Is there an energy around here coming back as you guys come back? What is the feeling like?
I think the feeling right now is just everybody getting to work, finally getting back, seeing each other again. It's cool, just everybody getting to work, trying to put our best foot forward for a new season. Right?
So you hear a lot of great things. I mean, I think everybody's just flat out excited. Then on Wednesday, we're invited to Soldier Field to hear about the next plan for a potential stadium in downtown Chicago along the lakefront. And the draft on Thursday night. And the Hall of Fame with
Hester and McMichael and Julius Peppers in August. I mean, this is like a tidal wave.
I mean, that wave started building, like I said, the second the Super Bowl ended. And I don't think it's necessarily going to stop Thursday with the first pick in the draft. It's going to go all the way through free agency. And then when this team starts to develop in the rookie minicamp through OTAs and into training camp, I think it's going to be an exciting time. And so for the season ticket holders, to the new fans coming aboard, to the fans the Bears are going to gain around the world with some of the talent they bring in here, from the development of the Tremaine Edmonds and the TJ Edwards, the personality development of a guy like Darnell Wright, what Montez means to this team, I think there's some exciting times going forward. I am excited to go to Soldier Field tomorrow to listen to Kevin Warren and George McCaskey talk about the future of the Bears. And so hopefully we'll have a message for the fans come Thursday on draft night when we're at Soldier Field.
All right, let's envision what that's going to feel like. We've been to many, many drafts at Soldier Field. The crowd's always into it. On rare occasion, we haven't been to everyone. Sometimes we were off campus doing shows. But when Roger Goodell goes to the podium with the first pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select USC quarterback Caleb Williams. Are we going to hear it, or is it going to be drowned out by just a raucous environment in there?
As soon as that, what is the beginning of you, comes out of Roger's mouth, that's the last thing we're going to hear. And then you're going to see him come out from behind stage, get that handshake, hug, whatever he's going to get from Roger Goodell. And like George Allen always used to say, the future is now.
Yep.
And that used to be one of his mottos. And from that moment that Caleb Williams walks on the stage and is announced as the first pick in the draft and part of the Chicago Bears, his future is now.
So I couldn't sleep last night. You and I both share that problem. I mean, I went to bed at 11:20. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to get a good night of sleep. And at 1:15, I woke up wide awake. I got a lousy 2 hours, and I really couldn't. So I put on YouTube on my television, and I watched as many Caleb Williams highlights as I possibly could that were on YouTube. The collection is stunning. We've all seen some of the unreal, unthinkable, dare I say, ridiculous throws and escapability that he showed. But I also saw some things that we don't talk about as much. Just his pocket presence and hanging in the pocket and making those throws over the middle and hitting every single stinking blade of grass. And I know that's the college game, and it's going to be a little challenging up here as well, but it just got me super excited, and probably the reason I couldn't fall back asleep. And I don't know what you've done in that regard. And I've watched some other tape as well, the actual analysis of watching it from an X and O's perspective. And I couldn't be more excited, Tom.
You know, one of the things that, as an offensive lineman, when you have a quarterback that has great athleticism, sometimes you don't know where he's going to end up, and that makes your block predictability a little bit more difficult. One thing Caleb does when you watch him inside the pocket, even if he's moving slight, a foot to his right, a foot to his left, he's extending the blockable angle by the offensive lineman. And I don't think that people understand how beneficial that is, because that 1 foot to the right that extends the blocking angle, the blocking position for the offensive lineman, that can create another 2.5 seconds. And if you're creating time within the pocket because you're not necessarily ejecting the pocket, you're just readjusting to a more blockable position, that does wonders for an offensive line. And so these guys really won't get to recognize how he complements them until they go back and they watch game film on certain completions, certain passes. But I think when you go back and you watch his time in college, all the way through college, and how he's always been a pocket complement, it's going to be exciting to see him when he's in the same system, the same terminology, with the same group of guys for a period of time.
And that is a great delineation there between the mobility and the pocket presence to find gaps and not eject, but to throw. And there's a difference between, and he is, he's His peripheral vision must be off the charts. Eyes behind his head type of vision. He is doing it with all in snaking in and around the pocket. He's not back to throw out of the shotgun and drifting away. That's when the trouble begins, right?
Right.
When So you always talk about guys got to stay on the same plane, right? He is still weaving his way through, in and out, finding these little pockets effortlessly, shrugging off hits. And he's a lot thicker than you think also. When he runs with the football, you know, he's a former linebacker back before he decided he wanted to be a quarterback. He liked hitting people. So, you know, you don't want to take too many of those. We talked about that, obviously, over the years with mobile quarterbacks. But your point is well taken because the drift is the problem. And when you got quarterbacks that drift, that they walk themselves into the big-time problems.
You know, that's why guys like Brady and like Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and stuff that aren't half the athlete that Caleb is, the reason that they were able to play so long healthy and successfully is because they didn't look to drift or to eject the pocket. They look to readjust and complement the blocking angle because they know what they're saying. So when they're calling the play in the huddle, they know what the protection is. They know where the vulnerabilities lie, and then they know all the routes that they called. That's why these guys who aren't the best athletes in the history of the NFL, i.e. Dan Marino, you become one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the league because you know what you're saying to the other 10 guys in the huddle.
When it's time to tackle some game day deals, then go with The Grocer, who's been a part of Chicago since 1899. Jewel Osco, the official grocery store of the Chicago Bears. Remaining moments with my guy, Big Tom. I don't know what you want to do at 9. I don't know if you want to play that game with me right now, because I can't make a decision. I'd be a horrible general manager, Tom. I'd be second-guessing myself even after the fact and wondering what could have been with player X, Y, and Z. I know what I really want, but then am I passing on something that could be a 10-year memorable player?
Are you too scared to say what you want? Because now you just add thoughts to everybody's head. If you know what you want, then say...
I want an offensive lineman.
Okay. There you go. Now the cat's out of the bag.
I want an offensive lineman, but I know I'm going to get ridiculed for it.
Well, no. Listen, I always say I have three guys in mind.
Yeah.
In number one is offensive tackle, number two is edge rusher, number three is receiver. If one of the three are there, I'm willing to take them. If none of the three are there, I'm looking to work the phones and see if I can create a lower first and maybe a second and a third for next year.
Interesting, during that conversation earlier in the show with Ryan Poles saying, you know, hey, where do you value like the defensive tackle position? And it's the closest to the quarterback, and that's that tilts Fields. That player is a premium position as well. He's referring obviously to the three technique and how that helps a guy like Montez Sweat. So, you know, let's not rule out that position still. I know they got Jervon Dexter Sr. on this roster. You've got Zach Pickens, second-year players, hoping to take a big jump in year two under Matt Eberflus and the new defensive coordinator. Eric Washington, I just want to know how you feel about that, because I don't want to limit it, I guess, to those three positions, because that position right now, no matter what, creates a lot of angst in an offense.
All right, what pick are we talking about?
Nine.
So there's a couple guys. There's going to be a couple guys that are going to, at number nine.
What's your familiarity with Byron Murphy II, the 6'1", 300-pounder from Texas?
Because there's guys like Marcus Harris from Auburn. Ruku, my favorite name. Oh, Ro-Ro-Ro.
Yeah, oh, Ro-Ro-Ro. It's a barking dog right about, there.
Yeah, you talk about him. 25 tackles for loss, 12 sacks.
Clemson.
You look at Marcus Harris from Auburn, 41 starts out of 47 games, 31 tackles for loss, 11 sacks. So the thing that I get a little bit more enamored by tackles for loss,
yeah,
because that shows me what you want out of a three technique defensive tackle, and 11 sacks and 12 sacks for both those guys is gravy. Tyler Davis from Clemson, 29 and a half tackles for loss and 16 sacks. So there's other guys that if you want to move down a little bit that are going to be there that I think that can give you a little punch on the inside. But with that number nine, if I can get one of the Dallas Turner or Verse, one of those outside rushers that not only do they have tackles for loss on their resume as an outside player, they have a good sack rushing arsenal. And so I have a little bit more interest in thinning out my protection than allowing it to come to one side. If you have a three technique tackle lined up next to Montez Sweat, you can always slide your protection in that direction. And then you have three on two.
Interesting.
Three offensive linemen on two defensive rushers.
Do you have a favorite wide receiver? And if so, why?
I'm torn right now.
I'm saying?
Juggling, right?
Yeah,
I'm
same.
Juggling, and I have Malik Nabers and I have Roma Dunze up in the air, and I don't know which one to catch because I like both of them. I think Malik Nabers gives me a little bit of more of that immediacy, fast twitch explosiveness, but I like the background and I like Roma Dunze, what he's been able to accomplish in college. So I'm going to make a juggler's impulse move, and I'm going to catch the one that comes down.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you look at it also, what don't you have on the roster that could be afforded to you here with that ninth pick? Like, what type of player don't you have? So, you know, I'm a big fan of Bruce Feldman. He writes for The Athletic and does, the Fox sideline reporting for College Football Saturdays. And talked to him at the Combine, and he just did a poll of a bunch of coaches, assistant coaches, scouts, about the latest news. It was printed today, and Malik Nabers is the guy that offers what you just described differently than Harrison and Adunze. I'm not saying there's big gaps, but it is something different. It's different. It's this rare explosiveness that has got everybody's attention around the league right now, with Jamar Chase and others.
You know, where do you want to play Keenan Allen? And how can Keenan Allen complement a guy like Malik Nabers to the outside? How can you create a two-man game with DJ Moore and Malik Nabers to one side or the other? So I think you have to see, how do you envision the offensive receivers and how do they complement each other to allow the quarterback to make the quickest decision possible if you want to get the ball downfield? So, like I said, you know, I'm juggling, and there's both balls are still up in the air, and I don't know which one to catch.
I respect your opinion because you're a thinker, man, and you know the game. So I'm assuming that Alt will be unavailable unless the Bears decided they wanted to trade up, and if in fact they want something like that. So let's just say outside of Alt, and maybe he will be there. I don't know. Who's your favorite offensive lineman, regardless of position?
Oh, regardless of position. You know,
there's a lot of good ones, Tommy. You know
there
it.
There is. You know, I like the center from Oregon, even though I need to see him to make more snaps from the quarterback under center. When you make a whole college career out of shotgun snapping, I got to see, is he carrying too much weight? The offensive tackle for Penn State, I like him. You know, he's a good athlete. He's played, but then
Olufashanu,
like I said, yeah. Then there's a couple of other guys, Javon Foster and Patrick Paul, that may be that made a living out of playing left tackle, that may be ready down the line. You know, is that Graham Barton, the center? He's converted from left tackle. When I came out my senior year, Don Mosbar played left tackle from USC, and he went and had an all-pro career at center with the Raiders. So that type of transition has been made before. But, you know, I like guys that have been playing the position that are going to play the position.
I've talked about him a lot. I'm kind of in Oregon State's Taliese Fuaga. And Troy Fautanu of Washington is crazy good too. I don't know. Yeah, it's a wonderful place to be in the top 10, and the world is the Bears' oyster right now. So
it really is. One of those receivers or defensive ends are there. Like I said, Javon Foster, 41 starts, 39 at left tackle. Patrick Paul, 44 games played, 44 games at left tackle. So you're not bringing in these guys, even though you may get them down a little bit in the draft and start teaching them balance in the fundamentals of a position change. You're just asking them to improve on the position they've been playing.
All right. Well, this was a chock full podcast, a little lengthy, but deservedly so. It's we're knocking on the door of the 2024 draft. We're all excited about it. Everybody's back in the building up here at Hallis Hall. We got the annual mileposts have kicked in. When you really start it off, when the offseason program begins, and you know you got the Piccolo Award, you know it's the season's right around the corner. So it's exciting. By the end of the weekend, we'll know what the Bears look like on paper, which is, Ryan Poles often says, paper looks different than the field. And then we'll find out what happens at rookie minicamp here in a short time. Tastes like Miller time. Go to MillerLite.com/BearsPod to find delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. You'll see Tommy and I at the Bears draft party. We'll be live on ESPN 1000 from 6 o'clock until 10 o'clock. We'll join Waddle and Sylvie before that. We've got TV duties. We'll talk to the first and ninth picks, should the Bears keep those picks. We'll have them in a very unique way at the draft party. You can check that out also on YouTube and other different platforms and the Bears website for that. So it's going to be a busy couple of days, and we look forward. We wouldn't miss it for the world, Tommy.
Oh, my! You know, I was up at Hallis Hall Monday. I saw those players on the field, and it kind of got the juices going in my belly. Because once you see guys in cleats on the field, it's here, man. It's here, and it's only going to get bigger on Thursday night.
All right, we'll talk to you and break it all down. We'll have our Bears Etc. podcast 66 next Tuesday. We've got Bears Weekly coming up through the draft show on Thursday night. So make sure you check us out. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Download wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll talk to you next week. We're brought to you by Miller Lite. Bear down, everybody.